sending this one out to my man Killer B. No doubt indeed, with that weed, you know what I'm saying? That old real shit. There's a war going on outside, no man is safe from. You could run, but you can't hide forever from these streets that we done took.
Of course we didn't, we didn't fucking ident that last episode at any stage.
Look.
It says who we are in the fucking show notes. The only difference is which guy is which. That's about the only thing you wouldn't be able to pick up.
You know, it's our show when we start talking about obscure NBA media shit halfway through the episode.
Yeah, God.
Anyway, fun times.
Yes, yes, indeed, it's fun times.
All right. Let's talk some tunes. What have we got?
We can talk some tunes. This is the After Dark, folks. I'm Doc. He's Bezo. You know that from the fucking show notes. I don't even know why you need us to tell that. Oh, he's the one who's got the higher voice. That's better. The only. There you go. There's your point of differentiation.
What are you trying to say, Doc?
I'm trying to say you sound like a ladyboy. No, it's that's not right. That's not right. That's transphobic. That's Sam Newman areas.
Well, the footy show is approaching our level of listenership. So.
Yeah, this is true. That we've got about as many listeners as we do. So every week we listen to a couple of new albums and a classic. We alternate between us who picks the new albums and who picks the classic. Change the format next week. But we'll talk about that at the end of the ep. Where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the new or the classics? We changed the format up last week.
Let's talk about the new, because
talk about the new.
Mount the Mammoth, right?
Shall we? Mount the Mammoth that sounds more like sort of if David Attenborough was around in sort of the Ice Age.
Mammoth,
which is reminds you, wasn't there a way of being of saying buffalo seven times in a sentence and having it being grammatically correct? I think that's probably the mammoth is not quite as smart as that, and not being not quite as smart as is probably the mammoth story. But so they're a bunch of Melbourne gronks, as we said last week. This is about their fifth or sixth album, I think. Kind of early 80s metal smashed into late 70s Aussie pub, sort of pub rock AC/DC style stuff. So it's got a Motorhead, Black Sabbath, AC/DC. Sounds good on paper, doesn't it? Sort of airborne on meth. I'm going to use an analogy from something that's probably closer to your heart. Your man Rogatkin and your man Semenuk riding down the hill. Now, let me get this right. Rogatkin is your boy who's... He's a bit of an adventurer who tries shit that might not come off.
He's the balls to the wall guy.
He's trying stuff that hasn't been tried before. Whereas Semenuk is a technician and a tactician and a dude who's not pushing the boundaries, but is very, 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 very good at what he does.
For the sake of the analogy, I'll let it roll.
Because you can see where I'm going with it.
Yes, Semenuk's actually... does push the boundaries, but he won't do something in competition or on video until he's got it down perfect.
So in music, you've got two choices. If you're in music, you can be completely adventurous and push the boundaries and do stuff that no one has ever heard before, and it might work and it might not work. Or you can be like Mammoth in a genre where you're not doing anything that hasn't been done before. The key thing, if you're in that space, is that you have to be technically perfect. You have to nail every fucking transition. You have to nail every jump. You have to make sure you do everything perfectly correct. You have absolute technically perfect execution. You've got to be airborne. Airborne do that really well. If you listen to an Airborne album, you're like, well, this is just fucking AC/DC Rose Tattoo from 1976. But then you listen to it and go, well, actually, it's better than anything they could have put onto tape. They've executed this perfectly. So I've got to respect that. Mammoth are not. very technically good. And the problem with that is that it just makes it sound like a bunch of demos from your mate's band, who you go to watch play because you get to drink beers on their rider, but they're never going anywhere. And the fact that, that this is their sixth album, you've got to be better than this by now. Good. You've got to be better than this by now. It's just, not there.
I thought you were going to yell at me for this because, once again, comes back to the overshouty vocal that's too high in the mix. Like that's what, you know, I got...
That's kind of the genre, though. I mean, that's literally the genre of heavy metal. It's an overshout. Now, he's got an awful voice.
Yeah, but see, I actually know where my threshold is, right? Stone Temple Pilots is my threshold. Like, he's got a very raw, shouty voice.
What era? And I know this takes us back to the very, very first After Dark classic album, but even between their first and second albums, there's a huge difference in where Weiland pitched his voice, where his voice was mixed.
Well, I'm talking about the Stone Temple Pilots songs where he was shouty, you know, where he was sort of really screaming, and there needs to be a level of, I don't know, restraint, tunefulness. I don't know what it is, but once you go over that edge, it just fucking ruins albums for me. It really does. And
yeah, you're not gonna enjoy all of heavy metal.
No, that's right.
Because I think what you're looking for is not screaming. What you're looking for is bellowing, because that's really what Weiland never actually. He never went into high octaves. He only kind of,
or,
particularly on core, was going to.
Yeah, well,
it was kind of gurning.
Dead and Bloated was the song I'm thinking of. Where it's like, I actually really like that song, and it's a really raw, not very attractive vocal performance in that song. But I think it actually works really well in that song. There was nothing in this that I thought the vocal worked well. And there was little bits of the music I thought were okay, but
I had moments where I was like, it sort of cut through. I was like, well, this isn't great. But then, like on the first song, Mountain, it sort of. And they had a long breakdown in the middle, and then they kind of build back to the chorus, and it got on, you know, gets under your skin, and you think, it's like, you think, no, this is actually just stupid. But the chords are kind of, because I'll always throw my fist in the air for a fucking big metal chord, but yeah, it was less than the sum of its parts, and it wasn't as good as it was on paper. I mean, as I say, if you're going to do this, you need to be the best. You need to be technically brilliant. And like, there are good tracks on this. Like, Sleepwalker's pretty good. I think that was the track that ended up on my Discover Weekly or whatever it was, how I found these guys. But it was probably the most unnecessary Kylie Minogue and probably the most unexpected Kylie Minogue cover songs I've ever heard. And they did Can't Get You Out of My Head. But again, that sounded better on paper than it actually turned out to be.
Yeah.
Turned out to be on the album. I really wanted to like these guys, and I gave them every excuse and every opportunity to be good and for me to like them. And they're just,
it's
sloppy.
It's a little bit like that that Hermitude album that we did a couple of years ago probably. And it was like, I had the same feeling. It's like, I love Hermitude. I really want to like this album. I really like this genre, and I like good new music in it. And it was just so depressingly commercial. And it's just, you know, it's like, just because you want to like a genre doesn't mean it's always going to come off.
Yep.
Mm. All right, Dave Catching.
It's a bit like you and your never-ending search for trip-hop. You just want it to be good. You want it to be the thing you want. And it's just, it's got the frustrating thing is it's got the component parts of it. I mean, the guitarist seems to be relatively competent. The drum, actually, one of the biggest problems I had was I don't think their drummer's very good. It seemed like on some of the fills, it was just kind of ever so slightly off, or it might have just been the way the guitar and the drums were syncing up, but it sort of sounded like they weren't tight enough. They weren't sort of actually synchronized particularly well. But, you know, good luck to him. But no, nah, you need to be at least as good as it. You, it's like one of those rides at Disney World or something. You need to be this high to travel on the ride. You need to be at least as good as Airborne to be able to do this, and you guys aren't. But Dave Catchett.
So this is the Queen of the Stone Age related band, isn't it?
So I think Dave Catching was kind of, do you remember when we did Rated R as a classic album, we said that kind of Rated R was Queens of the Stone Age, but it was really a little bit like that that first Foo Fighters album, in that it was the first Foo Fighters album.
One guy and parts.
Well, yeah, in that case it was literally Dave Grohl playing all the instruments, whereas with Rated R it was Josh Homm and a whole bunch of friends and colleagues who he'd known over the years played in that sort of desert rock scene. I think it might have been recorded at Dave Catching's studio, and Dave Catching was one of the dudes who played on that. But Dave Catching's been more in he was briefly in Queens of the Stone Age. He's been in he is the guitarist for Eagles of Death Metal, and of course he owns the studio that a lot of those sorts of bands in. So he's in that scene, obviously.
Yeah, had a real
connection.
Real, you know, if you'd played this for me, I would have said it was a Queen of the Stone Age side project. That's it. Just had that feel of it.
Yeah, I could see that. Some of it kind of felt, there was some tracks that certainly felt like the second track feels very early Queens of the Stone Age. It's got that kind of gloomy, but there was also some other stuff that felt kind of quirky indie pop. And there was some stuff that could have been, that sort of felt like 80s new wave. And there was, it was a real mixed bag and a really interesting grab bag of styles and things. It was even a track that kind of matched his ZZ Top looking beard. It kind of felt, the closing track on the album is called Overdrive. And it actually feels like a fucking ZZ Top song, because it's got that kind of driving beat and of course, you know, singing about driving down the highway is a very ZZ Top kind of, as a relationship metaphor, is a very ZZ Top place to be.
Yeah. Yeah, I've thrown it in my 2017. I think I want to give this one a bit more of a re-listen. There's some really, really good songs, and I think it's an album that'll grow on me a bit.
I'm just not, my question is whether it works, because it is such a grab bag and such a...
Yeah, it's...
It doesn't work as a coherent album. And I know I like most of the songs on the album. Ironically, I mean, the guest stars on the album are all no names. If you click through to to Spotify, none of them have bios, except for Mark Lanegan, who we know was an icon of that scene as well. He was in Screaming Trees. He was early in the piece in Queens of the Stone Age. And, you know, he's one of those names that pops up quite a lot. But ironically, the song he's on is probably one of the weakest songs on the album. So it's kind of it is Dave Catching in a bunch of unknowns who are doing this sort of stuff. But
I didn't listen to this album as many times as I normally would, and I think part of the reason why was I sort of listened to it and went, oh yeah, this is a good album. I really enjoyed it, and then didn't
because dig
I
more
almost feel.
Into it?
Well, I almost feel sometimes when it's a crap album, I've got to be able to justify why I think it's crap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's kind of like you've got a banker, you know. Yeah, I know that's good. I don't have to worry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, I'll come back to that one. And yeah. I never really, I didn't do the headphones thing. And that's, yeah, does it have that coherence to hold up as an album? You really need to listen to it, you know, six, seven.
It's a collection of really interesting, engaging ideas. Does an album have to be anything more than sort of 9 out of 11 good songs that you like to listen to? I mean, does it have to be a rock opera with a journey associated with it? Probably not, but, you know, it's... I don't know, just a spoiler alert, folks, for next week, we're going to do a little bit of a half-yearly clearance and go back and review some of the albums that we've listened to across the first half of the year and compare notes as part of some other discussions we're going to have, because we are up to 100 episodes. It'll be a bit of a 100 episode special. So I've been sort of looking at the albums we've listened to this year, and I've sort of sifted them into kind of top 5 albums and sort of top 10 albums as sort of a second tier. And I think this album, at the moment is sort of fits into that second tier. I don't know whether it's if it's quite up there with the best albums, but it's certainly worth reconsidering, as it sounds like you're doing.
Mm. Yeah, so yeah, I've thrown it in the playlist. Yeah. I'll go back to it and give it another listen.
What's your favorite track on the album, or do you feel like you haven't really dug into it deeply enough to?
I think it was track 2 or 3, "Shake, Shake, Shake." I think was
yeah, that was kind of quirky, new wave, 80s kind of, but also yeah, it was an interesting song.
I went back and gave the album another listen to this week. And it's probably got the same, not the coherence, but just like it feels like they really knew what they were doing for a third of the album, and then you know got distracted by a fucking party or something, and just laid down just incoherent shit for the rest. It's another one where I just don't know whether the album's strong enough to hold up as an album in the end of the year, which is a shame because a song like "Dancing Is the Best Revenge" is just a cracking song, and it's like, oh fuck, I wish you'd put it. It's almost like having a gun top 10 NBA player, and then you know Anthony Davis, and just surrounding him by shit year after year after year, and never actually seeing what he can do. It's that's like how I sort of felt
the,
about
the
that
American
album.
National team with Pulisic. It's sort of well, you've got this absolute gun, this diamond in the rough, and then you're just surrounding it with rubbish, or just average hacks. And it's it's going to be you'll sell posters and tickets, but you're never going to win anything with them. But you know, fuck America. I like the ZZ Toppy one. I like the OK Goey one. I like the kind of quirky pop stuff. Yeah, it's interesting. I'll look forward to sort of revisiting that after a little while.
So should we talk the classic?
So the classic was an unheard classic. Not a classic either of us had previously listened to. And this is Mobb Deep's The Infamous. That's not The Infamous, not as in Bizarre's best mate, the MC from the 1200 Techniques. Shouts to Tim Tamps. So the prodigy from Mobb Deep died the week before last, I think. Thereabouts. Weeks, yeah. So I got lots of shouts, and Bizo hit up some hip hop type listening people who suggested this was what's the word I'm looking for? Not informative. A stronger word than that. This was very influential. God, that's a word I should be able to say on cue. It was very influential in terms of the beats of some of those Brisbane acts that you're big on. And you know, I think I can see the lines that connect up those two ideas. Having listened to this and having listened to some of that early Brisbane stuff.
But one of my favorite authors, Terry Pratchett, and he used to read voraciously, and he'd pull these ideas from, you know, just weird bits of history and stuff like that. And evidently he just had a notebook and he was just constantly writing ideas, how he could weave stuff into stories. And occasionally I'd find a bit of trivia or read a bit of nonfiction, and a light bulb would go off in my head and go, oh, that's where that storyline came from, you know, that little bit of trivia.
That's what he was referencing,
From the, like, 1300s fucking Vatican or something like that. There was one where
But Pratchett would have been deliberately aiming for that stuff. He would have been saying, I'm keying off an idea that you might know.
Oh, but even, like, some of it was just so obscure that unless you, like, you would have to have come across this bit of trivia completely randomly, like it wasn't sort of stuff that was easily found.
Yeah, but Pratchett fans are massive nerds.
Oh, and that's right.
We're talking about it. These are not normal people.
That's right, and I'm one of them.
Pratchett is too nerdy for me. That's how nerdy you have to be a Pratchett
fan. But listening to this album is like suddenly understanding where Brothers Stoney come from, because the beats, the flow, even the
their propensity to carry weapons and sing about prostitutes a lot.
Well, that's where I wanted to go into it. Was I did not enjoy large chunks of this album in terms of the content.
The lyrical content.
The lyrical content. And then I was thinking about it.
We're both
like,
in, I think we probably both agree. I mean, gangster, hardcore fucking rap bores the fucking shit out of me. I'm not interested. Yeah. I don't care about your Glock. I don't care about the deals you're pulling on the block. I don't care about your bitches and your hoes. You are fuck you. It's reinforcing bullshit masculinity that needs to go and fuck itself with an axe. And I know that's white privilege because I'll never be in Compton and I'll never have to fucking sell drugs to keep my family alive. But it says nothing to me. The whole message of it is just completely anathema, and it's not something that I'll have any particular interest in spending any of my time listening to.
The one thought I'd, because I'm absolutely with you on that, like gangster rap's never had much of an appeal to me.
Particularly after the golden era, because this came after golden era hip hop. You're very socially aware public enemy stuff and you know, that era. And then, you know, before that Run DMC and the Beastie Boys and guys like that. It was kind of, you took everything I like about this genre and replaced it with a whole lot of what fucking bullshit. Nah, I'm good.
Well, look, this sort of came off across, though, less as, like, it is a brag, but it's less, you know, look at all my bitches and hoes, I'm so rich, you know, I'll take anyone down that tries to come after me. This sort of came as this low-level grifter, this is my life, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah. How many times has he mentioned his fucking Glock?
Glock. I'm not.
I know Glock rhymes with a lot of things.
I'm not defending the lyrical content. I'm just saying it didn't come off as something that you would want to emulate, that's for sure. Like, if you listen to this album, would you go, oh yeah, hell, I want that lifestyle? It's not very encouraging, do you know what I mean?
But clearly it was for some people. Because, you know, it was important to them.
But the beats is, like, if you turned off the lyrics and just listened to the beats, that jazzy sort of, like, not completely repetitive, but, like...
They're quite like, sparse.
Sparse and open. It's like... this bit, then this bit, then... like, you can see how the beats are being built, and I can totally understand how this music influenced Lazy and Lenny to write their beats. It's almost like, yeah, you can just see where it comes from. And I really like the beats on this album.
Maybe because it's the order of in which you discovered it, you know, because you associate these kind of very sparse beats with the hip hop that you love, but I don't particularly enjoy or think the beats are particularly interesting at all. I mean, I think I find them very simplistic, very fucking my first Casio tone. There was nothing. I wouldn't want to listen to this album as a instrumental album. There's nothing really going on there for me.
Yeah.
And I think what makes, to be honest, I think what makes, you know, your boys, what makes that, for want of a better phrase, Brisbane hip-hop interesting, it's not the beats, because the beats are, again, very, very, very basic. But it's the richness of the lyrics. It's the richness of the content. It's the experience. It's the pictures that are painted. And it the sparseness of the beats gives you a canvas that you can build them on. You're never going to lose that lyrical content in amongst all of the... you know, the complexity of beats and the complexity of sound. It's not like it's going to be drowned out. It allows the words to actually find their space, which is kind of, you know, if you want to bring the spotlight down on your flow, on the words you're saying, then having a very sparse beat structure is a very good way to go. But when all you're thinking about is your fucking Glock and your bitches and your hoes, then that doesn't help me.
Yeah, see, look, I find this sort of beat much more preferable to some modern hip hop where they go, oh, let's find a 70s pop song and, you know, rip the guitar line out of it and just play around with that.
But like, that's boring because it's already been done, because that's what hip hop was in the golden era. That's what, you know, that was fucking Run DMC sampling Aerosmith. That was the Beastie Boys getting someone in to play riffs that sounded like AC/DC because they couldn't be asked, they couldn't get the rights to sample AC/DC. That was done 30 years ago. I think also part of what that is the sort of people who take a fucking, people have been taking fucking, since hip hop has been around, they've been taking old pop songs and sampling them and going, yeah, over the top and turning them into stuff. But that's, I always feel that's more sort of an R&B thing. That's more of a pop, that's really just pop music.
Mm.
It's not really, I know it's hip hop, but it's not really what I think of as hip hop. It's just another part of the hit factory. It's just a cover version of a pop song that's intended to sell records, which is what cover versions of pop songs are meant to do.
I enjoyed this album a lot more when I had it in the background and I wasn't listening to the lyrics, put it that way.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. And, you know, I think what we've concluded here is that both of us hate the lyrics and you like those beats, and I prefer different beats with my hip hop.
Hmm. So I was going to go with another hip hop album this week. I was going to go with
But the problem is that we're not picking new albums for this week, so there's no point of you doing that.
Yeah, I know, but I thought, well, let's do the Jay-Z album this week, and of course it's not on Spotify, it's only on Tidal, so I thought, well, that's okay, I'll be generous and I'll buy every one of our listeners a Tidal membership. But it turs out that doesn't do it either, because if you buy a Tidal membership after the day the album dropped, you cannot listen to that album.
Unless you're on Sprint, which is like an American thing. And this whole thing is an unholy marketing party. So that was interesting. So on the same day, Jay-Z dropped this much-hyped album that was only available to Tidal subscribers or people on the Sprint network. The equivalent is Optus locking up all the fucking Premier League stuff. And I can't believe more people aren't pissed off about it. So there's that. So, or you've either got to be on Tidal or Sprint or both. And it was this massive event. On the same day, Public Enemy said, it's our 30th anniversary, have an album. And just put it out on Bandcamp for anybody to download. And I've been thinking about the difference between that, because I haven't heard the Jay-Z album, and I can't say that Jay-Z has ever particularly interested me, I have to say. Maybe it's an East Coast, West Coast thing. I don't know whether there's a lot of East Coast, you know, sort of New York East Coast hip hop that interests me. But I did listen to the Public Enemy album, and it's better than the one that we reviewed a couple of years ago. It's actually much better value than Free, which I think is quite impressive. Whenever someone gives away a free album now, I'm always thinking about that U2 album, the Malware album, as somebody rather appropriately called it. So
I cancelled my Apple Music membership, and the only reason I had kept it was to play music off the Apple TV, because Spotify is not on the Apple TV.
Remember when we used to have discussions about which was better, Apple Music or Spotify?
A lot of people like Apple Music, but I'm so locked into the way Spotify do things now, and I can leverage its idiosyncrasies to my advantage. But anyway, so Vanessa's playing just whatever was left in my library and on random. And of course, that U2 album is in everybody's library, and it popped up, and I'm like, I've never heard this U2 song. Oh, yes, that's where it's from.
That would be
It wasn't a very good song.
No, it's free for a reason. But that's what I thought, oh, well, this Public Enemy album is going to be free for a reason. But it was pretty good. I mean, it wasn't Nation of Millions good. It wasn't fucking Fear of a Black Planet good. But it was better than the fucking album that they asked people to pay for in 2015. Yeah. But I thought a lot about that because there was a lot, because NBA Twitter is very black, and there was a lot of dudes raving about how it was, you know, amazing that this dude, his 47-year-old father of two, was spitting rhymes like this. And I was thinking, yeah, but he also is just doing this to make you to drive subscribers to his fucking streaming platform. Mm-hmm. It's I just, you know, I It just felt like such a craven, shameless corporate act. The way it had all been rolled together. I don't know how you divorce that from the experience of listening to the music and go, well, this is clearly just this is a unit to be shifted.
Someone on The Ringer made a really good point this week, which was
lies.
Once upon a time, if someone locked up, like if you know, if a really popular artist that you really liked locked up their music, and you sort of had this narrow repertoire of music that you really liked, you know. So if you were only into Kanye and Jay-Z and I don't know, a couple of other rappers, then you know, then maybe you would go and pay for Tidal. But now people are so used to streaming and so used to just jumping and trying so many new different things that they basically said, oh yeah, Jay-Z, I haven't even thought about listening to a Jay-Z album for ages because it's not on Spotify. And I go, oh yeah, I'd like to listen to it. Oh, it's not on Spotify. Okay, well, I'm not going to go and buy a fucking Tidal membership just because I feel like listening to a Jay-Z track. I'll go and listen to something else.
Yeah, and it's only if you have to go and listen to it, if you like you deliberately are trying to go and find it, you'll go and maybe look on YouTube or something. But it's still not going to give you what you want. I don't think this siloing of music availability is a good thing by any stretch.
I don't think it's going to work. That's
no. Sure. I think this Tidal Sprint thing's going to backfire on Jay-Z because they did the same thing with Lemonade, didn't they? Which is, and apparently this is kind of a response to Lemonade, and apparently Jay-Z cheated on Beyonce and blah, 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 blah. If it wasn't for most of this is being sold on the basis of fucking gossip and wank, and it's kind of, yeah, good on you. I mean, Chuck D wouldn't do this. It's kind of what I've been thinking all the whole day, all this carry on with Jay-Z. I'm like, Chuck D wouldn't have done this. And Chuck D's only like 8 years older than Jay-Z, or Hover. As I realized he was being called, I was trying to. I know I'm out of the loop, but people are referring to Jay-Z as Hov. I was like, Hov? What's Hov? It's because he's Jehovah. He's the Messiah of hip hop.
Right.
I don't know whether he gave himself that name or not, but that's
Yeah, needs work.
Good on you, mate. Good on you.
All right, so explain to our listeners that are left what we're doing next week.
We're having Jay-Z on the podcast to explain what the fuck. Now, folks, next week, this is After Dark episode 99, so next week will be episode 200. It means we've been doing this for a bit over 2 years, and we were going to have a bit of a special episode looking back at the best albums that we've listened to, both in the first half of this year and also across the 2 years that we've been doing this. And we thought we'd invite a friend of ours on who actually has been paid in the past to be a music reviewer. He is a much more professional version of what we do. And that is Albion Love Den, Ben Connolly. So he's going to come on with us and we'll talk about our favourite albums of the year so far, his favourite albums of the year so far, albums that we've liked over the time that we've been doing this, how stuff like streaming has changed the way we listen to music and generally have a bit of a yarn. And as the guest, he gets to pick the classic.
Do you want? And has he picked one?
Well, you were included in the message, so I was going to get you to say, but obviously you haven't read the messages, so...
What are they on the email, are they?
A DM. It's a DM thing.
That's I have not got those That's messages.
Interesting, you're LinkedIn because I also anyway, production meeting going on, and if I happen, well, let's a little bit of context.
I just thought you were really professional and organised everything. I didn't know
I have supposed but, to be. On. No, I was surprised you hadn't piped up. I've already organised episode 101, and you've missed out on some hilarious Twitter content on that one as well. But we might talk about that offline. No, the classic album for next week, I think you can probably guess it, Brisbane Band. We haven't done them before. I don't think you were ever likely to pick them. Campbell Newman thought relatively highly of them in an infrastructure sense.
It's, yep. I'm getting where you're going here. It's game.
Where I'm going and where I'm coming back from, and where I'm perhaps going between.
Oh dear.
The classic album for next week is, by the Go-Betweens, legendary Brisbane band. It's actually their 2000 album, Friends of Rachel Worth, I think it's called.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
And I think that's a bit post peak. I feel like that was a comeback album.
It was a comeback album, and it was very, I would have still been in the venues at that stage. And I can definitely remember that live show being promoted. And a whole bunch of industry people of a certain age being very
it sounds like a fantastic euphemism.
Well, being very excited about them being back, I guess.
But of course, Ben would have been an industry person of a certain age as well in that era. So,
yeah, I guess so. They released quite a few albums after that, which is interesting.
Oh, did they? I thought that was kind of.
These might be
re-releases and post-peak stuff.
Re-releases,
I've definitely heard of that album. I haven't spent
Friends
a lot
of Rachel Worth.
I haven't listened to a lot of the Go-Betweens, but in my head, I kind of conflate them with Dunedin Sound bands, the kind of jangly 80s sort of navel-gazing pop sounds.
Mm.
So at the moment, I'm just watching a man two-wheeling a Range Rover the entire length of the Goodwood Hill Climb course, which is pretty impressive. Oh, no! He dropped it on four wheels about 20 yards from the end. Oh, it's so disappointing. And the suspension's kind of leaned over completely. Anyway, that's not relevant. We're going to have Albin Loveden on the podcast. I'm giving him his real name because he does use his real name on Twitter, unlike various other anonymous cowards who appear on Twitter.
What, you're saying my name isn't Bezo?
Yeah. Bizzo.
And your name's not Doctor. Bizzo.
Oh, Woj Bomb, Juru Holiday, 126 million to stay in New Orleans.
Jesus, that's a lot of money.
I'm so disappointed with you. You're trying to come up with a name for what happens when Ramona Shelburne drops a bomb and drops a Woj bomb, and you said, "Is it a shell bomb?" And someone had to correct you and say, "It's a bombshell." Obviously, you moron.
Wasn't me, was it? I didn't say that.
You said it on the fucking. Didn't you say it on the Balls account?
No, not me.
It wasn't me. Who the fuck was it?
Who gave Adam the password?
Who was I correcting on the fucking? Oh God.
All right. Well, that'll be interesting. I will do my best to be objective about the Go-Betweens
instead of being objectionable.
All right, Doc.
What else is
Well, there? I'll see you next week for number 100.
Indeed. The big 1000.
I'll send you a cake now that I've worked out how transactions in New Zealand work.
Well, he's telling me it doesn't move. I don't know if Little Land will do you a beer or not. Or do you a cake or not.
Do you a cake.
I'm trying to figure out who it was. Maybe I dreamed the whole thing. That's entirely possible.
You've just knocked me back on the official account so many times. You just think that every time you knock someone back,
sure it was you. I am sure it was you.
No, not me. All right, see you, Doc.
Cheers.